Bold. Brave. Herb. With Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode 532 of the Bold and the Brave, Her podcast. Now, today I'm joined by a repeat offender. That's correct, Amundo. Oh, my goodness gracious. Chef Abby Gelman, who's been on the show countless times to basically set us all straight on anything that has to do with food, nutrition, and all the rest of it, because she is extraordinary. Little package deal, Chef Abby Gelman. She is a culinary nutritionist. What is that? Well, it means that she has a master's degree in nutrition science. She's also a registered dietitian and a certified chef. That's right. All rolled into one. So, of course, I have to go to her so that all of you can enjoy her all over again. She's also the author of the Mediterranean Dash Diet Cookbook, Mediterranean Pressure Cooking, and the Instant Pot Mediterranean Cookbook. Abby, welcome aboard again. So good to see you.
You too. Thanks for having me, as always.
Well, you know, everything's been lighting up on my social media and on my internet about ultra-processed everything, as well as the Mediterranean diet. So I'm going to start with the Mediterranean diet first, because it just pops up all the time as the go-to. What is the magic behind the Mediterranean diet? What's going on with that, Chef Abby?
Sure. So I think people just find it easy-ish to follow. There really isn't much magic. It's really lots of fruit, lots of vegetables, lots of whole grains, lean protein, heavy on the seafood, right? Because around the Mediterranean Sea. And the fun thing that I love around social lifestyle choices. So you're eating with your family and your friends. It's a social event. So kind of joyful living. You're moving your body. So what you love to say, you're assuming the vertical, right? You're maybe taking a walk. You're doing some exercise every day, doing things that make you feel good by moving around. Maybe you're having some red wine or a little bit of alcohol every once in a while. But all of these things kind of making for your day to day.
Okay, but why is it that researchers are all over this? I mean, there's so many other dietary options out there. People are going keto, people are doing this and that and back and forth. But it seems to me that among the credible researchers in the nutrition field, it's all about the Mediterranean diet. So why? What is going on there?
Yeah. So for me, the Mediterranean is very close to like what the Heart Association says or the Diabetes Association, all of these things with kind of being stable and well-rounded, right? So you're making balanced plates, but the Mediterranean maybe jazzes it up a little bit. So maybe you've got rosemary and oregano when you're looking at Greece, or maybe you've got cumin and coriander and some warming spices when you're looking at Northern Africa. Israeli type of things when you're looking at that area. It's a very diverse region, even though they're all countries in the Mediterranean. So it's kind of taking a very basic look at how to eat, but adding in kind of spices and herbs and making it a little more interesting versus eat your fruits and veggies, make half your plate veggies. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You know, what I've always thought about the Mediterranean diet, I just think about Italy and Greece. I don't think about all the other countries and the diversity. Why is diversity so important in terms of what you're eating?
So two things. One is so you're not bored, right? So kind of bottom line.
Boring.
Same thing every day. I get bored. I don't want to eat steamed chicken and broccoli and rice every day. I want to jazz it up.
Hey, you're yelling at my diet. Yeah, be cool now.
No, you got to jazz it up. And the other thing is your microbiome, and I know we've talked about this before, you want to introduce different things to it. So if you only eat yellow foods, for example, that is a very specific vitamin mineral profile, for example. So we want to have orange foods, we want to have red foods, we want to have purple foods and all the different colors of the rainbow, because those all give different vitamin and mineral nutrients to our body. So we want to have cumin and coriander and different herbs and spices, because those all feed our bodies in different ways and they taste different. So they give us different enjoyment as well.
So you mentioned the microbiome, that's the gut microbiome. So there are trillions of, well, what I love to call, you know, this friends with benefits. And these are, you know, bacteria and viruses, and these are all good things that are all hanging out in HOAs, in your gut microbiome, little gated communities in there. And what they're doing is they're chomping on the food that you feed them. And by doing that, you get to release all of the health benefits, which are phenomenal. But, you know, it's so interesting when we mention the gut microbiome, I think the Mediterranean diet makes the little guys down there in the biome extremely happy, because there is a ridiculous amount of diverse kinds of foods. And why is that important? Because each of those colonies of bacteria, virus, and all the rest of it, they all feed off certain nutrients. And why is that important? Well, I'll give you an example. If you have a healthy amount of those nutrients coming through the system, then there is actually a freeway that goes between your gut microbiome and the brain. It's called the vagus, right? And so right on up to the brain it goes, and you can control mood, because the gut microbiome, if they're happy, they're going to secrete serotonin, which is a mood modulator, 90% of which comes from the gut. Who knew that? First time I ever heard that, Abby, you know, I almost fell off my chair. I said, what? I thought it was all in the brain. Little did we know, things got a little more complicated when it came to the gut per se. So the gut affects every single part of the body. And this is why, you know, I'm running up and down ranting and raving and saying you need diversity. And one of the things I love about the Mediterranean dietary regimen is that it's got that. And I don't care if you're doing time-restricted feeding, intermittent fasting, whatever you're doing, what are you eating, right? I mean, you could have the Mediterranean diet as your go-to. And that's really, I mean, Walter Longo, the great longevity scientist at USC, who has really done some of the biggest research in the field of longevity, when he created a lot of his program for 5-day fasting and all the rest of it, he said, in between, when you do these 5-day or 1-day kind of fasting, what do you eat? Mediterranean. Now, it helps that he's Italian. I think he's horribly biased, but it's something to keep in mind. So, you know, make your, you know, before you eat, look down to your tummy. I hope it's not like protruding in another state, but even if it is, look down to your tummy, have a conversation with the trillions of friends with benefits and say, hey, what do you guys want to eat today? What are we going to do to make you happy? Instead of just doing what Chef Abby alluded to, which is eat the same crap every day. And speaking of crap, let's move over to ultra-processed food controversies. So there's a lot of play on this, and I know that Chef Abby, you and I have had conversations about this. Let's update it a little bit. And in updating it, we want to be very careful about how processed foods, ultra-processed foods, all of that is actually defined, so that starting with definitions, we can then have a conversation. So what are these?
So it's very complicated.
I know.
So processed foods are anything that aren't as they were in nature, right? So an apple is what it was in nature. But as soon as you have applesauce, it is processed. That doesn't mean it's bad. It just is not in its natural state, right?
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I'm going to ask a whole bunch of stupid questions, okay? So frozen vegetables, processed. Do they count as processed? So
they are processed, yes, because they are frozen. They had to be harvested and then some, you know, they're blanched, which is hot water, which they do so that they, you know, microbes will grow anymore, and they are cooked a little bit and then they are frozen. So those are also exactly right. Frozen fruit, all of that processed. Oatmeal, your morning oats, that's processed. Again, that's all minimally processed.
In other words, it's not processed with a bunch of junk.
Right.
Right.
So that brings us to the next thing. So ultra processed, generally speaking, could be, and I say could on purpose, could be something like a chip or cracker or something that was made to have a lot of fat and sodium and fake flavors and all
sugar.
Sugar, all of that kind of thing. Yeah. So processed ultra, but it never really was an apple or anything to begin with necessarily, right? So it might have had corn or something in it at some point, but it's kind of a lot of chemicals or flavor additives and that kind of thing. Where we get into trouble is things like soy, for example, like tofu, which is a very healthy food, is categorized as ultra processed by something called a NOVA scale, which I, again, don't want to go down the rabbit hole, but tofu and soy-based foods, for the most part, are very healthy and we should and can be eating them. So we just have to be careful when we're talking about the ultra-processed foods that we should avoid or have as sometimes foods, right? Or like smaller portion size occasionally or never. We're not putting things like tofu or tempeh or soy milk and things like that in that category. We're going to go back to the foods we were just talking about with those fake flavors and chips and crackers and lots of sugar and salt and fat and all of the things that are more like science fair projects versus.
Mm-hmm. That's food. My favorite. Right. That's my absolute favorite phrase.
Right.
So is this a situation where you look at the label and if there are like 30 ingredients, most of which look scary, is that an ultra process?
Usually. Yeah. And
it's an ultra process that you wouldn't want to.
It's difficult to have a hard and fast rule about that because there are things like they're vitamins or fiber or things, and they put the scientific name as the ingredient on the label, right? Or thickening agents and things like that. But they're things that are really like snack foods or baked goods or dessert type of things where you eat them and you don't feel full, right? Because there's no actual
fiber.
Yeah, fiber, right? There's no actual meaningful food to the food, if that makes sense, right? So like if I'm cooking something from scratch and I'm making, if I were to make a cracker from scratch, for example, and I'm making all of that, I'm probably putting nuts and seeds in there and I'm actually making something with whole foods versus like saltines or something. Saltines or Ritz crackers, which is just processed, ultra processed white flour that your body's going to digest and absorb very quickly. Your blood sugar will spike. You didn't actually nourish your body and you're just going to be hungry again. So you didn't actually eat anything that was helpful in any way, if that makes sense.
What about hummus? One of my favorite products is hummus with dill, lemon and dill. And so it tastes wonderful, but it comes in a little square container in the produce section. And I didn't squish the chickpeas to make the hummus. What is hummus then? And
this is a really great example. That's a processed food, right? But I would not consider it to be ultra processed, although other people might, but it's processed, right? But if you look at the ingredient label, there's chickpeas in there. So it's beans pureed with probably tahini and maybe some other ingredients that some people might say are thickening agents or for preservatives and such, but it's technically a processed food. So they will be in there to make it last longer, but that doesn't make it necessarily bad for you. And not everyone has the luxury or the time to cook from scratch for every meal for every day of their entire life. So getting things like yogurt and hummus and all of these types of things for daily life in current society, you need to be able to rely on those types of groceries.
I mean, salad dressing, one of my favorite is from sort of one of the health food store kind of places, you know, Sprouts, and it's tahini and sesame and this and that. So I assume that's processed, right?
Again, processed. So it's almost like pick your battles, right? So yes, you can make your own salad dressing. I do it. Lots of people do it, but also lots of people buy salad dressing. So like, that's not the worst thing in the world.
Obviously, we're living in a world that's time constrained and people are running around like crazy people. And it can be very burdensome to sit back and say, whoa, almost feel guilty that you're not like cooking everything and doing whatever, especially for moms who are so busy, or quite frankly, women who are just up to their ovaries, if they still have them, in work and caregiving and everything else that's going on in their life. And I want to kind of clarify that there's a new book that's coming out by Kevin Hall, who is one of the top NIH nutrition researchers. And in that book, he's arguing not to use the word toxic. Have we seen the word toxic knocked around a lot?
Yeah.
You know, with regard to, what's that about?
People like the word toxic and the word clean and the word, like it's like this whole wellness influencer lifestyle where shame, blame, and guilt becomes a big part. And at least for me and a lot of the work I do, if you are middle income America or below, you cannot be part of that lifestyle at all, right? You are working, you have kids, you are busy, you don't have time to do all the self-care and look for the labels that are clean and do everything from scratch every day and all of the stuff that's happening. It's just not possible, nor should it be in any way, I don't believe.
So I'm referring now to a New York Times guest essay by Kevin Hall with his co-author, Julia Baluse. And they have a book coming out soon called Food Intelligence. And he was a former NIH nutrition scientist, and Julia's a journalist, and she was someone who's always struggled with her weight, and he's been doing a lot of, if you remember, he was the one who did the Biggest Loser research, and he was the one who found that indeed the mass majority of them regained their weight in a big way. And now he is trying to understand how to be able to message a new way to eat. And it was interesting. The name of the article was, "It's Not You, It's the Food." And of course, they have a picture of like a whole bunch of pastries and whatever. What these authors, basically, Hall has stated is that we need to be able to look at our diet very differently. He said his studies build on earlier research that found as societies shift toward Western-style eating patterns that are dense in calories, rich in ultra-processed foods, people grow fatter. And you could really see this in people who immigrate to countries where you have more of a Western style. And there's a new theory about what's going on. Humans are born with a system of internal signals, and these are hormones and neural pathways, just like I was talking about with the biome, that guides our food choices and how much to eat. And so toxic food environments disrupt this symphony of internal signals in which we aren't conscious of. Our bodies weren't designed for a calorie onslaught, which I kind of like. In the same way, a house built for moderate weather isn't designed for a heat wave. So he's arguing for the fact that we're eating in a way where our bodies are just completely misaligned with the kind of food or food products. Sometimes I can't even call it food. When you're exposed to that, and then we understand that this is a real challenge to all of us. And I think that he's absolutely correct. I mean, he's done so many of the pivotal studies here. I think that what's happening is that scientists like himself are shouting out saying, number one, we're just plain eating too much, period. Even if it's good stuff. I mean, there's pasta and then there's Mount Saint pasta. And we eat way, 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 way too much. But we're also eating foods that stoke our appetite for more. And you just said it so well when you were talking about the crackers, which are basically processed and they're just nothing. It's beaten down glucose, what's left of it. And then it just spikes your insulin and then causes the insulin to crash, meaning that now you're more hungry than you've ever been in your life. And it just starts a vicious cycle. And you're like, wow, something's taken over my entire body. I feel like I just have to eat everything that's not tacked down. No, it was what you ate was getting this going. I'm going to argue for something interesting. And when we come back, I want to hear what you have to say about the four-letter word, cook. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, Solaray's got your back. And we're back. All right. Cook. That's a four-letter word. Oh, my goodness gracious. It's sort of like when I say, hey, did you cook that? People oftentimes look at me like, what are you, nuts or something? I mean, I bought that sucker down at the deli or whatever. I don't have time for all that. Clearly, cooking puts the full control in your lap. But what's happening with cooking in America?
I mean, it's interesting because I think people are scared of cooking because they think it is very labor intensive and takes hours and hours when really it doesn't have to, right? So there's shortcuts. You can buy frozen vegetables already chopped up. You can buy frozen grains already cooked. You can buy fresh fruit and fresh vegetables and things already chopped up, right? So that's already one step you can take away from you. You can buy rotisserie chickens and chicken. You can buy pre-cooked proteins and things, right? So if you want to cut down on time, those are some very significant ways that you can cut out kitchen time. Canned goods also. Canned beans, canned lentils, canned fish. I love canned fish. All of these things are great to have on hand all the time. You don't have to cook dried beans and lentils from scratch. All of these things are readily available all the time. You don't have to have salad every day. You don't have to spend an hour chopping up vegetables. You don't have to cook beef bourguignon and do things that take forever from scratch, right? So it is possible to get dinner or lunch or everything on the table and ready to go in a half hour or less. You just have to kind of plan a little bit. It's all in the planning and the prep, right? So that's where people, I think, get more tripped up, and it takes them longer to get things done because they didn't think it through beforehand and make it more strategic. And then they end up either at home not knowing what to do and they're not thinking it through, or they're at the grocery store, they didn't plan ahead, they didn't make a list, and they don't know where they're at. So if you spend just a little bit of time kind of planning your week, maybe finding the recipes, sitting down, and even just doing a little bit of prep work ahead of time, it cuts all your cooking time down easily.
Okay, we want to know how you live every day. So what we want to know is, what do you have for breakfast, lunch, dinner? Like, how, as it were, easy is it to prepare for some of these things and then just have them on board, and however you do your eating, which I know that you cook from scratch basically all the time. I've always prayed, it's one of my dreams to live next door to you. So I could just come next door and go, can I have some too? Seriously. But how do you do it? Since I'm an athlete, people want to go, well, how do you work out? You know, and I do my little thing. And all right, so you're the chef and the culinary nutritionist. You tell us what you do.
Yeah, I'll give you some of the ones I do most often every week, just kind of for...
And this is based on Mediterranean as well, right?
For the most part. I kind of think about it as, like, I guess what I explained earlier. Yeah. So I always, on Sundays or Mondays, I usually make a pot of beans or make sure that I have canned beans. And I make about half a dozen hard-boiled eggs. Always go in the fridge. My daughter's in college now, so I get to kind of cook what I want. So it's a little bit more exciting for me. But I usually...
Emptiness.
I know, it's crazy. But we used to do Taco Tuesdays. So I would get out a pound of beef or chicken or turkey, whatever she wanted that week, and I would put it in the fridge to defrost. And then I would make sure I had vegetables and tortilla shells and whatever for that. And then we also would do sweet potato night, like a choose your own adventure sweet potato night. So I made sure I had everything for that. And then she will always eat roasted broccoli or cauliflower, so I made sure I had that. And then everything around that was kind of leftovers. And for my breakfasts, I always eat like an omelet with veggies and avocado or overnight oats. So if I'm going to do overnight oats, the night before I make them, they go in the fridge. If no overnight oats, I chop up some veggies or use leftovers from the night before and cook the eggs cut up in avocado. And that's basically...
You know what I do with the overnight oats? Ever since you taught me this thing, yeah. I do the overnight oats.
Put the protein powder in the morning, right? I mean, that's what I
do. Oh, yeah. Well, actually, to be perfectly blunt with you, I could do it in the morning. I could do it any time of day.
Okay.
Right? I just whip it out of the refrigerator. And if I've got a training day where I'm really, you know, yeah. You got to keep up with your protein.
That's
and
right.
Really, between you and me, it's hard mm-hmm. to really make certain to get in all the protein that you need, which should be at the least 1.4 grams of protein per kilogram body weight. And so for the grand majority of women, generally speaking, you should have at the very least 60 to 80 grams of protein per day. And as you age, it's even more important. So all the, you know, because most of our biochemical functions are not as efficient as you get older. That's why you need the more protein. So there's that. But I love that. The overnight oats, I put in walnuts. I put in some dried fruit, just a small amount, some dried cherries or, you know, whatever, or papaya or something. I always put in cinnamon. Cinnamon, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, helps regulate blood sugar. So it's a very good thing. I do that. And then I have a couple scoops of protein powder, which gives me 20 grams of protein and I could just rock and roll, or maybe a smaller serving with just 10 grams of protein. It really depends upon how my protein's going that day. So that's what's important here more than anything else. But I love that. And I also like the fact that you don't have to be strict. How many people, raise your hand and be honest. I'm looking at you right now. You know, how many of you have had omelet for dinner?
Oh my God, I love it. We call it Brinner. Breakfast for dinner is Brinner.
There you go.
Perfect. It's also great. Or a bowl of cereal. I love it. Sometimes I will also have a bowl of cereal and string cheese for dinner because I forgot or was running late.
Yeah. You're running like a crazy person.
A yogurt and a thing and a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We have days that we can't control because things have just happened one way or the other. And you got to, you know, remember. But try, please, to do what Chef Abby does, which is be prepared. So in your cookbook, you have all of these kinds of recipes that are kind of, you know, quick and easy, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, I know a lot of people ask me, you know, there's only me or me and one other person and all the recipes are for four people. And my answer is always the same. Like, I live alone now because my daughter is in college. I still make recipes for four. I make a batch of meatballs and I eat them all week. I make a chicken and I eat it all week. I add it to my lunch. I have it at dinner. I use it in different ways. It's even easier because you cook once and then you eat it several times, right? So then you aren't cooking every night. Not really. You're just kind of composing things together as you make your way through, which is even better, I think. So.
Oh, that means you have to be organized.
That's right.
That means you have to find that Sunday or Monday, however you're doing it, just like Chef Abby said, and find the time to be able to sit down and do this. And if you've got someone in the house with you, have them join in, because really the food thing is such a cultural gig and it feels so good. And I personally love to be able to do food stuff basically as a family on the overall. And it's a feel good. I mean, what feels good about slapping some science fair project in the microwave, waving it for 2 minutes, like what kind of a cultural experience was that? And I understand a lot of people live alone. That's totally cool. But what about honoring yourself?
Yeah, I still want to eat good food. Just because I'm by myself at home doesn't mean that I should only get to eat nice food in restaurants or something. I still want to have what I want to have, you know?
No, I mean, have a self party. There it is. And take good care of yourself. I was also looking at speaking of going right back to Little Mr. Ultra, bad stuff. One of the things I have found, right, is that there's some new research that had just come out. And this research was in Cell Metabolism. It just came out in August, so a month ago. And it was the effect of ultra-processed food consumption on male reproductive and metabolic health. Rot-row. So even though this is the Her podcast, we got guys in our lives. And so there are things that are going on, like super ultra-processed, you know, just call them science fair projects. It's what I call them, meaning that there's 38 ingredients and none of all of this looks like it came out of some Frankensteinian laboratory. So they found that a lot of these kinds of foods that come in the big boxes, the big bags, and with the gazillion ingredients, they have a lot of a hormone disrupting phthalate. And that's a substance used in plastics. And what they found is that men who were consuming that type of stuff saw decreases in their levels of testosterone, as well as their follicle stimulating hormone, and therefore their sperm production decreased. Ouch. Okay. I mean, like, what? And at the same time, you know, you're obviously stoking obesity and diabetes because you're playing around with your blood sugar level. So none of that's good, right? And that's just with guys. You can only imagine that phthalates aren't exactly great for us as women either. And there's been tons and tons of great new research all about women and hormone disrupting diets that are messing with our menstrual cycles, with the transition to menopause, and obviously all the way through perimenopause. It's just spend more time in produce, right? Just do that. And then frozen vegetables. I use frozen vegetables all the time because sometimes I just can't run to the market and grab everything that I need. So I love frozen fruit and vegetables because sometimes the fruit isn't in season, but I can get it frozen. So that makes me feel good. What's your feeling about smoothies?
I actually just had one for lunch because I didn't have time to do anything else. So I feel good about them.
What do you put in yours?
So I always put soy milk, and which I do, and that's a perimenopause thing because I find the soy helps me with hot flashes and things like that. And I put protein powder and frozen kale and some sort of frozen fruit, and then usually a little handful of nuts or peanut butter or avocado or something for a little healthy fat.
Yeah, and it really sticks to your ribs when you do it, needless to say. So I love that. I try to get as creative as I can. I'll throw in ginger and carrots and all kinds of good things that really make me feel good, you know, in a big way. And it's a great way to just kind of quickly drink your meal when things get crazy. So I guess what I'm really saying out there in the Her podcast land, guided by our wonderful culinary nutritionist, Chef Abby, and all of her beautiful work, is that in the best of all worlds, we really are spending a lot more time, quite frankly, come on, let's be honest, eating foods closer to nature as best we can. And then understanding that just minimally processed foods are perfectly fine. Nothing wrong with them whatsoever. It's important for us not to demonize anything that is like completely from nature at that very moment. My frozen vegetables aren't, and I love them. And they work perfectly fine in a pinch. Obviously, I have fresh vegetables too when I can. But I'm busy, you're busy, we're all busy, and we're trying to just survive and thrive and do the best we possibly can. So we have to be very careful about tossing around terms like toxic and horrible and whatever. I mean, let's be honest. You know what the junk is. You know what it is. People know. Come on now. You know exactly what we're talking about. When you get those things, whatever they may be, in big boxes and bags and Lord knows what, and they're loaded with sodium. But when you see that stuff going on, you know it's trash. I don't have to tell you that. So how about we back off and just try to wean ourselves off that stuff and instead really concentrate on, like, experiment. Do a little bit of cooking. I deal with a lot of women who have had eating disorders, just some level of disordered eating. Binge eating is the number one. And they're afraid of food because they don't feel safe around it. And so they tend not to buy a lot of food, unless, of course, they're on a binge, and then it's all trash. But I'm asking you to redefine your relationship with food and just grab Chef Abby's Mediterranean-cookbook, right? And look at how simple some little tiny steps can be toward being able to eat food that is not bingeable, right? That will fill you up with protein and healthy fat. And there's nothing wrong with sugar so long as it's the right sugar. So, you know, we could use maple and we can sweeten with carob and carrots and many other things. So just, I know that this is tough. This is really tough, especially in our society where on every corner there's temptation to eat bleh on the overall. And now, Chef Abby, you have a series of wonderful YouTube, basically cooking lessons. So how can people find out more about that?
Yep. So on YouTube and Instagram, it's Chef Abby Gellman, ABBIEGELLMAN. And then online, it's chefabbygellman.com.
Excellent. And what can they find there? What are they going to see?
All sorts of videos. I've got probably at this point like 1,000 cooking videos and recipes, and they're all very simple. I don't do anything crazy. And I have everything from hors d'oeuvres and appetizers to main dishes and side dishes and desserts and alcohol beverages, non-alcohol beverages, everything in between.
Excellent. 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 You and I are both strong believers in making sure that you get all your vitamins, minerals, and nutrients. And since we're not exactly perfect with our diet, you know, we do our multiple vitamins. We love our Solaray, which is obviously wonderful. The liposomal for women's is fantastic. And keeping up with your vitamin D, you know, get your vitamin D level done, but making certain that you take your vitamin D every day as well, and your calcium for your bones. And all of this is with Solaray. They are absolutely superb. So I highly recommend, needless to say, and your Bone Complete for your bones with all of the nutrients, ingredients that you need. So one last little shout out to everyone, Chef Abby, people who are on the fence going, I don't know if I can do this. What would you say?
I would say pick one meal, and it can be a snack. It doesn't have to be breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Pick a snack, one thing a week, maybe even just like one day a week that you can add something. So maybe you're going to add carrot sticks or hummus or an apple. You're going to add something that is a fruit or vegetable and see how it goes. And then the next week, maybe you're going to add 2 days of that and see how it goes. And just start there with baby steps and see how it goes over time.
I love it. You know, it's always about those small steps. Chef Abby, all of us, thank you so much for helping guide us through this, oh my gosh, maze of insanity out there when it comes to eating and to cooking and to trying to nourish ourselves, mind, body, and spirit, one way or the other. Thank you, Chef Abby.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to thank my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs Rooted in Nature, and the new Her Life Stages products. You really want to be able to run on over to Solaray, Solaray.com, learn all about the multiple vitamins, everything that we've already mentioned, and the Her Life Stages for all of the hormonal stages in a woman's life. We're here to support you. Run on over to Solaray.com and learn more. Now, take a moment and leave us a review because we love to hear from you. Just know that this has been a production of Podcast Health. And remember, your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time, like cooking, are not. So get on out there and seize the day. Run into your kitchen and start cooking right now. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Little voices underneath. Thanks, everyone.